Listen.
Colin and Samir are the duo that are breaking down the creator economy one creator story at a time. They make incredible documentaries, studio tours, and provide breakdowns with the biggest US talent, where they offer out useful insights and learnings. They entered the space as students, creating an online channel that provided lacrosse content, and they quickly realized they wanted to figure out how to do this full time. After lots of pivots, learnings, and a few times of almost giving it all up, they landed on this path and found their audience. They have turned this into a successful business with an impressive studio, multiple members of staff, and a top-tier phone book. Let's get into it with Colin and Samir. Colin Smith, thank you so much for coming on Unboxed.
Yeah, thank you. Amazing. For having us.
Thanks for having us.
So you've been in London now for how long?
Differing times. Actually, this is the first time we've done something like this where I've been here for over 22 days. I came with my wife and traveled for 10 days. Then Colin came and met me. We've done episodes for the past 10 days and now he's traveling after this.
Amazing. Where are you going after?
So my fiance actually got here last night and then tomorrow we're heading to Paris. And then after Paris, Amsterdam. And then back to the States.
Yeah. It's got to be done while you're here, man. You got to do the content.
Well,
right?
I will say it's an important time for us because we've been working together for 12 years and this is probably the first time we've valued taking a break and like resting and experiencing something different. We've been very work obsessed for 12 years.
Yeah. So. I mean, 12 years is a long time, right? I mean, how have you found working with each other for 12 years? Like, that's a big chunk. I'm 26. That's nearly half my life. You know, so how have you guys found it for so long? How have you kept as such good friends and colleagues?
It's sometimes surprising to us as well. You know, I'll look at Samir some days and just go, I can't believe I'm still looking at you. Like, not, and I'm not tired of talking to you. Mm. Which is surprising after 12 years. But I think, you know, a lot of people maybe don't know that our context started not as friends, as coworkers. You know, I was working actually for Samir when we first started. So I think it's much easier actually to stay or evolve into friends, but always have that base core of being that it's a work relationship. Because our context together is that we're going to build something together. That's what gets us excited. That's what binds us together. Not that we were just friends.
Mm. Yeah, we weren't friends. Like I saw his work and I was like, I need this guy to come work for my company. And so we became collaborators pretty quickly. And I think being collaborators, you become friends. And I think over 12 years, you become family.
Yeah.
Because, you know, to work the way we work, like your income is tied to each other, right? Like your opportunity to earn, your daily life, the decisions that we make impact our daily life together, right? So you operate a little bit more like family, I think, when you're creative collaborators than like friends.
Yeah, yeah. And 1.3 million subscribers now. Over how long have you had the channel between you guys?
Since 2016.
2016, this channel, yeah.
What's it feel like to hit that milestone? I mean, you guys have obviously met some of the biggest creators in the world. You've documented this space better than anybody, really. You know, what does it feel like for you to have also achieved these milestones as creators yourselves?
The million subscriber milestone was the one that I think for me, there was a large period where I thought that would just not happen. You know, there was a lot of self-doubt in this, in the Colin and Samir channel. From 2016 to 2019, maybe even to 2020, nothing really worked. Like it didn't work. We had some pops of videos that would do well, but we couldn't figure it out. We weren't making any money. We really spent 4 years with very little viewership, no traction. And so I spent a lot of that time being like, this thing that we imagined, this like million subscriber, and what that meant to me was like, quote unquote, making it in this industry, felt like very elusive and felt like it wasn't going to happen. And I think the strangest thing was that it, you know, in a way where you're watching numbers on a screen go up in a very digital fashion, we got to experience our million milestone in person with a bunch of people.
It was at Vid Summit.
And it was not planned. It was just, we were kind of joking around about how we hadn't crossed
the million. Probably
going to be today. Yeah. And then we put the number on the screen and not realizing there's a group of people in the room who were fans of ours and also had their own, because our audience is all creators, so they all have their own audience. And so they all started kind of pushing it and we crossed a million in the room with over 1,000 people, which was one of the most special experiences. Mm. And to be 100% honest, that after that moment, I have no other subscriber metric in my mind. Like if we don't grow anymore, it's completely fine. Yeah. I don't have another outcome in my mind that represents something to me. Like 2 million subscribers does not represent something.
Yeah.
And I think even a million subscribers, like it does represent something, but more so it's, you know, the it was nice to have a goal to work towards to get us into a flow of like deeply understanding ourselves of what do we want to make and how do we want to show up. I think the most important was landing on like feeling like we were providing value to this industry and providing value to our audience. Yeah. And, you know, that is a byproduct of it. Growth is a byproduct of that.
Mm. And you say what, between 2019 and 2020, that was when it just didn't work.
2016 and 2020. Yeah, yeah. We're talking about 4 years for two grown men not making any money, but meeting up every day and making YouTube videos.
Because like, so when you say after, you know, you needed to figure it out, you need to find your value. Like what was it during that time that kind of got you to that point where you found that? Like, was there a moment where you were like, this is it? And this is the switch we need to make or whatever that was.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of experimenting. And I think in 2016, coming off the heels of the Casey Neistat era, the thought was, all right, we'll have a channel called Colin and Samir and we'll just talk about ourselves. You can monetize self-expression. Mm-hmm. But I think what we found was, you know, when we're at the laundromat with a camera, it's not that interesting.
Mm.
And Casey Neistat had like a breadth of experiences and life to talk about. And he was an amazing filmmaker. And so we were kind of like working really hard on different types of videos, vlogs, video essays like Vox. We were very inspired by, and they just weren't really hitting and they were really hard to make.
Mm.
And then finally, we decided to make a video about Beam, which actually was Casey Neistat's app that he started. And it was a conversation that Samir and I were just having over coffee. And it was Samir who said, you know, why don't we just make a video about this?
Mm.
You know, this is what we talk about every day. We get together and we talk about creators. And it was that video where the goal was not to reach a huge audience anymore, like it was with the vlogs that we were making that weren't working. The goal was, can we just connect with the 7 people in the office in New York who work at this company and maybe the few people who find Beam interesting?
Yeah.
And within an hour, all the employees commented on the video when we put that out. And then that became our most watched video. That was like 70,000 views at the time.
Mm.
So that was the first indicator that talking about creators on YouTube might be something that will work.
Yeah.
But it still took us another 2, even maybe 3 years to settle on that.
Mm.
Every video we made was about creators. And I think before we knew it, you know, we didn't know it was called this, but it was about the creator economy. We, you know, to go back in time, I started a business on YouTube in 2012, and that's how we met. And we sold
that business.
It was called the Lacrosse Network. So it's it was a sports network online. Probably the most niche idea in the history of ideas. I don't want to you know fully claim that, but like
it's up there
in one of the most niche ideas you could have. But I was really passionate about it, and it was like my small community. That's how we met. He was making content. He's making a docuseries about his club college lacrosse team. And I thought about the Lacrosse Network as like a television network. So I needed to acquire rights to programming. And so he was creating programming. Yep. He was like a production studio, right? And I like distributed his content. And every day we had different content that came out on the channel as if it was TV. So the weekends we started to do live games. On Mondays we would do highlight roundups. On, you know, I think it was like Tuesdays we'd release his show. And then we treated it like a TV network at the time. And that didn't make much money. Actually made $0, as you can imagine.
I mean, the pool of lacrosse consumers is probably kind of small, right?
It's small. Yeah. My thesis was like, it's a affluent sport. It's very niche. If I build the only destination for it, as the Nikes and Under Armours get into the sport, there'll only be one place to advertise. I thought that would happen in a year, but it ended up taking 5 years for that to happen. And that did happen. We did work with all those brands that they got into the space. We were the only place. And so over the next, you know, 3 years, when Colin moved out to LA for what he thought was a 3-month internship, turned into, you know, a long partnership. And we sold the company, we sold Lacrosse Network to a bigger sports network. And
Whistle, right?
Whistle, yeah. And so quickly then, once we got acquired, we got to work with Dude Perfect.
Yeah.
And that opened our eyes to like, wait, this is way bigger than like a lacrosse, you know, channel. Like this is the future of entertainment. Mm,
bigger than most channels and most traditional media at that time, right? Their numbers were, and they still are.
They still
massive.
Are, which is amazing. But they at that time were, it was almost felt like we were in on a secret. getting into YouTube at that time. Because there was like the FIFA, you know, players. We got involved with the F2 Freestylers.
Great.
The, you know, Whistle got a big investment from Sky Sports. So we got involved in, you know, stuff out here, which is where we got involved with the F2 guys and started learning. It felt like we were in on a secret. Like it was 2014 and we were working with the biggest creators at that time. And, you know, our friends knew nothing. They didn't know what we were talking about at all. They didn't know why we were so excited about YouTube.
But then you show them the numbers and they're like, wait, what?
And even those numbers didn't feel real to people at the time. But I think we just were interfacing with them and working on problem solving and working on things that had not been worked on before. Of just like, how do you create content in a way that's two-way where the audience is involved in it, where they're commenting? I used to think about like, what if you were watching ESPN and you could say, you could comment something and then they change the programming the next day. That would feel really empowering as an audience member, right?
And so
that was the engagement. That was the interaction that, that like these creators were developing entertainment alongside the audience.
A two-way relationship.
Yeah, a two-way relationship.
For the first time, really.
For the first time ever.
I think for us too, a lot of validation was starting to come from the brands that we were getting to work with because of Whistle and because of Dude Perfect and some of these creators. We were all of a sudden in the room with Nike or with Under Armour, or when we worked with Dude Perfect, we were doing an LG phone campaign. And so we were getting like a really deep understanding for how advertising works with creators. And these were huge household names where our friends may not know Dude Perfect, but they know Gatorade, you know? And that was for us, for people who were pitching those campaigns, producing them, we were getting validation from that.
Yeah, because one thing I was gonna ask about that transition point, going from the Lacrosse Network, obviously selling, you guys making that a success, and then working with creators who were kind of building at the time, I guess, the start of, you know, traditional media businesses or new traditional media businesses in the content, in the creator economy, right? Like Dude Perfect, needing a content production team and needing a scale business under them. What were the learnings that you took with you from managing to successfully make a network like the Lacrosse Network and then bringing that into the world of creators? Like, were there things where you go, you know what, we did this and it really worked. You need to apply the same thinking. Because I think at that time, people weren't thinking in those terms, right?
I think it was just truly like a deep, deep understanding of audience. Like the audience is such a big part of the creator economy. They're the biggest part, right? And I think sometimes we forget about that, that like it's them that are creating the creators. And so as a creator, you're playing this, you're dancing with the audience, you know? And there's like, we all say there's three players to find like your fit as a creator, which is, it's what you want to make. So as the creator, that's the most important. If you don't want to make it, it doesn't matter. It's what the audience wants to watch. That's like the second most important thing. And then it's what the platform wants. So there's different iterations of all three of those things every step along the way. And that's a constant evolution. Sometimes the audience reacts to totally different things. You know, sometimes the platform wants longer form content. Sometimes the platform wants shorter form content. And you're kind of playing this dance of what do I want to make? What does the audience want to watch? And what does the platform want? And I would say every step along the way over the past 12 years, it's been like anytime we haven't been successful from a like commercial perspective has been when we've almost leaned too far into our artistic selves, because that's sometimes not as commercially viable. And that's an okay thing to do. It can just be, hey, this is what I want to make, you know, and I'm just going to make it. But that you can't have commercial expectations of that.
Yeah.
When we did like deep studies of our audience, you know, in 2020 with Colin and Samir, as we started getting traction, the first thing we did was, let's take a step back. Who is this for? Who are we creating for now? And what is the transformation they're experiencing? Who are they before they watch one of our videos? And who are they after? There's this exercise called Emotions and Identities that we learned from the from Jonah Peretti, the CEO of BuzzFeed, which is write down the identities of the people you want to speak to or you are speaking to in a column. And then next to it, write down the emotions you want them to feel. And then draw lines between those. So for us, as we got into this, you know, journey with Colin and Smear, we broke it down to aspiring creators, career creators, and the creator industry. And those were our three, you know, primary audience groups that we realized we were talking to. Then, you know, on the right side, we wrote down the emotions. Okay, well, we want those people to feel educated. We want them to feel empowered. We want them to feel a sense of community. We want them to feel less alone. And so then when you draw lines between, well, how do you make an aspiring creator feel educated to make more money or to build their career? Well, there's video titles in that line, right?
Yeah.
That's the content that you're making. So you start to realize if it doesn't fit into that, don't make it, because you're playing this dance with, like, you are providing value to an audience.
Yeah.
And they are rewarding you with watching it, you know, engaging with it. Like, that is the two-way relationship.
When obviously looking into more of your guys' story in depth, right? There was a time when you quit everything, right? You actually went to get real jobs. Yeah. What was that process like? Firstly, why did you do that? And then, you know, looking back on that, how does it make you feel to know that you kind of took a step out to come back in?
YouTube, the channel had not really taken off. We had found success with some videos that were doing well, but we couldn't replicate the process quickly enough. And there was not really that much brand interest in 2019, especially if you think about the term creator economy, you came like a year later. So we were looking at the end of the year in October, and we were kind of done operating as a production company, because we were doing great work, but we didn't necessarily know how to be a production company. And we got to the end of the year. Samir was taking a trip to India in December, right? And it was October. We kind of looked out and we were like, okay, there's really not many brand deals coming our way. There's none. We don't have a project booked and we're out of money. And we're not willing to do the production job work that we were doing in the past. And so it just came to a point where it was like, this has been incredible, but I think we might be done, because money's not coming in on the YouTube side and we're not willing anymore to do the production jobs. And so ultimately we just made a hard decision that while we may still continue to make some videos, it's not going to be, our partnership will no longer be what needs to drive us financially. So I moved home to the East Coast, to New Jersey. Samir went to India. So we both started applying for jobs.
That was confusing.
Yeah.
I'd never made a resume.
Start, right?
Well, no, I'd never made a resume in my life, or a CV, as it's called over here.
Yes.
But I'd never made one. So I sat up at night trying to explain what I had done in my career. And obviously, you know, we, you know, started and sold a company. So we had some, but it was demoralizing 4 years into it, being like, I thought I was on top of the world. I thought I knew how to do this, but I don't.
Yeah.
And then you're sitting and trying to justify the last 4 years on a resume. Well, I was uploading YouTube videos to virtually no one. You know, that's what I've done in the past 4 years. And it was tough. It was confusing. And I applied for a job at Spotify as a like story producer or something like that. And I was so confused how to tell them what I did. And I was like, but like, it's Spotify, like, they'll understand what I did. And I sent in my resume just to get to the point where you could apply.
Yeah.
And I got denied. And I was like,
damn.
I don't know how to do this. Like, I don't know how to play this role in this world. And I had a network of people that I reached out to and then started getting some traction, but I started listening to the job opportunities and I was like, I think I can do that, but I don't know how to be an employee.
Yeah.
Like, I started trying to imagine it and I was like, what's that going to feel like? I don't know what that's going to feel like. And I remember feeling at that moment, it was probably January that I had been, you know, doing some applications and I was like—
January 2020.
January 2020. And I was like, whatever this is, like, I don't know, it's not going to be me being an employee. So I'm going to have to figure something out.
I remember I applied to work in the social media department for an NBA team and thinking like, I can make video and I can put things out, but I'm not a huge fan of this team. I remember in the interview, the guy that I was speaking with said, this sounds like, you know, you could definitely do this. But it was getting so far into January and then in February. And he said, but I think with this COVID thing, we're probably going to be letting a bunch of people go. He was like, I don't think...
In February 2020,
he was just like, I just don't know what's happening here. We may not even have any videos to make. He was like, but I think you're qualified. I've seen the stuff you posted. Like, you could come make videos about the NBA. And I was like, okay, but I don't even know if I want to do that. And then the fact that, what's this COVID thing? Like, what's happening? It was just such an unknown, weird time.
So there's this crazy sequence of events that I would only rack up to, like, the universe looking out for us, which was in January, we're talking on the phone just like, I don't know, like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah.
He was like looking for apartments in Philadelphia. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just kind of hanging out, trying to figure out what to do. And we got an email. So when we had made that Beam video, they invited us out to New York. We went out to New York and we were exploring making a show with the team at Beam. And on that trip, we met a guy named Paul who still to this day runs 368, which is where Casey worked and Casey yeah. Neistat's project. And we just had coffee with Paul. That was it at 368. And then years later, get an email from him being like, hey, you know, I really liked your guys' vibe and Samsung is looking for some creators who kind of represent the next generation of filmmakers. Can I pitch you guys to them? Can I connect you guys? And that is what led us to a year-long deal with them that brought Colin back.
With Beam? Or with,
no,
with the
with
people
Samsung.
They connected? Oh, with
yeah.
Samsung, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Which led us to a year-long deal, which
oh, wow.
brought Colin.
Just reignited it, gave you yeah. guys the money mm-hmm. to be getting.
Gave us the money to, yeah, to yeah. be like,
we can do this now.
We are now Colin and Samir. Like, we have a deal.
Thank you, Samsung.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that they believed in us and saw that in us, I think that the lesson there comes from this, you know, ability to network and also stay this course. Like when we sat with Paul, we were the guys who made videos about creators and who were really passionate about this modern world of filmmaking. And so when opportunity hit, you know, it was like, those are the guys. And that gave us the opportunity to do one project with Samsung, which then in an almost movie-like scenario in a hotel lobby in San Francisco, they handed us a physical contract, which never happens, yeah. for a year-long deal with them.
Wow.
And Colin had been flying from Philadelphia to San Francisco. We had been kind of trying to figure out how we were going to do this. They handed us a year-long deal.
Pre-COVID, by the way.
Right before COVID.
Right, just before. Which is also great
crazy.
Timing.
Yeah, great timing.
A few months mm-hmm. after, they probably wouldn't have done it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, a few weeks.
A few weeks.
It was really close
yeah.
to it.
And we used the last $4,000 in our bank account at that time to bring Colin to LA and get him an Airbnb to live out there so we could make videos. The biggest gift was getting enough financing to be creators.
Yeah.
And that's what gave us the platform. I would say two things happened. One, we got this gift of this deal. And two, COVID and the pandemic created a radical sense of focus because we had nothing else to do.
Yeah.
We had nothing else to do but meet up and talk about what videos to make.
Mm.
And the sense of like comparison kind of went out the door too. The insecurity around these guys are making it on YouTube, we're not. It just became this blinders on scenario.
Mm.
I don't know how to replicate that. And I don't know if without that, we would be sitting here right now.
I think we were so hyper-focused and so interested in building this thing that there was not much room for anything else during that time. And we look back at our 20s and while we don't have many regrets, the one thing we talk about is how dedicated we were to this and how little time we opened up for travel, for relationships, for just relaxing. You know, there's like, we really were just so focused for so long. And I think it's important as a creator and as a creative person to always have new and interesting inputs. And I think part of the reason it took us a while to find success is because we weren't exploring as much as we probably should have been.
There's a great quote from Whitney Cummings that Tim Ferriss told us, which was, if art imitates
Tim Ferriss
life.
Tim Ferriss came with some bangers in your
show. Yeah,
he really did.
Oh,
really
man.
Did.
I mean, he's like, you know, most great, of my right? 20s were like narrated by his show. So it was crazy to talk to him. But he said, if art imitates life, then you have to have a life. And I think we really sacrificed having
That's
a life.
Good,
That's a good one.
That's
yeah.
a good one. Yeah.
We really sacrificed having a life. And I think we came from this startup culture, this grind culture of like, put your head down and just build. And I think we forgot that like we're creatives, so we have to go have experiences. And I think that's what attributed to having, you know, not as interesting of content because we weren't living life. We were just sitting in a dark room shooting and editing all day. So I think my advice to myself would be like, everything takes longer than you think. Everything. Even when I look at us wanting to build a new business right now, like we're exploring, you know, paid education, right? A course business is not going to happen overnight. We have to look at it and go, that's a maybe 5-year journey to truly build that, right? And so now I have the perspective to relax and be like, I need to find a way to mentally and financially commit to this for 5 years. That's when it'll pan out. But at that time, it was like month to month. You wanted something to work in a month's time. And if it didn't work, you were upset. And then you're like, I'm going to move to the next thing. And then that created a situation where you felt like you could never take a break because you were always missing the next thing.
Yeah.
Every meeting felt like the biggest meeting of our lives.
Yeah.
So we'd stay up all night making a pitch deck. And I don't regret like working on those and being that dedicated. But it definitely now we have the perspective that every meeting will not change your life. It'll be okay.
It'll be fine.
Yeah.
I sometimes think that like we, the reason we are who we are today and why we are so committed to educating is because we are essentially speaking to our younger selves.
Yeah.
Like we're making the show that we wish we had 10 years ago. We're getting perspectives from the people that, you know, the current crop of aspiring creators look up to. And we're trying to understand who these people are as humans and how they've built what they've built and what are the implications of all of that. We didn't have that when we started on YouTube. No one was talking about what it was like to have this career. And I think that, you know, we've always been creators that are creating for our younger selves. Even with the Lacrosse Network, it was for a 13-year-old Samir who was really into the sport and didn't have a place to go and feel like I was a part of a community, to watch videos and to understand the community. The same thing with what we're doing with creators. We built a career on YouTube, but didn't have a destination to go plug in to what that meant to be a creator. And I think now, like, I just, you know, it's our reality. I think to be Colin and Samir today is to have gone through everything we went through and to experience all of that so that we can, you know, educate and turn around and be like, here's what we learned, you know?
You know, naturally, you guys have spoken to the biggest creators in the world for a number of years. As you say, you are their place where they can go and they can trust, they can have a voice. What are some of the biggest sort of threads and attributes that you think sort of join the dots between all of these incredible people? If you were to pick, let's say, five creators, what are the threads between them that you see?
We say this a lot.
Yeah.
People ask us this. It's radical focus. It's, you know, there's a lot of creators that start to get some momentum and pretty immediately launch a bunch of things or, you know, lose focus on the concept of like, I am making almost, I'm making a show. You know, like this is the show I'm making and I make it week in and week out. Marques Brownlee comes to mind, you know, sitting with him over the past couple of years. I think he's one of the most focused creators. You don't see him launching a bunch of things.
Yeah.
Like he launched a shoe this year and that was one of the first big launches he's had. And that took him years to do. And he's very methodical with what he does so that he doesn't lose focus. Like his ability to turn around a video in a day's time, you know, is really impressive. And I think it's because that's his focus. He wants to be best in class at making videos about tech. When you go to his studio, everything is built around making videos. And even with Jimmy, right? It's like everything is built around making videos. And even in our last conversation with Jimmy, he talks about refinding his focus and saying, it's main channel and Feastables. And even that is a lot, right? You're running one of the biggest media distribution channels in the world and one of the biggest chocolate companies in the world, right? So it's like, that's a lot to run. And I think sometimes we overestimate how much we can do with our media distribution and forget that the distribution is the root of it all. So I think it's the focus of, I'm actually willing to be a video creator for the next two decades and just make the best videos.
Yeah.
That's overwhelming because sometimes you think about it as a path to go do the next thing. And a lot of those creators, I think, lose sight of the fact that, again, you're dealing with an audience. Like you have an audience that's expecting value from you that you are delivering to. If you're in love with that process, you're going to have radical focus in continuing to build that.
Yeah.
And that unlocks everything.
I mean, interesting case study, I think, at the moment, which maybe signals a bit of this, is like the influencer boxing side of things, right? Where you hear about creators who stop with the influencer side, creator side of things. I don't really like the term influencer, but you know, the creator side of things. And they focus all on the boxing. But then the reason why they're there is because they are a creator, ultimately, or they're an influencer, so to speak. And that's what gives them the platform and the ability to connect with audiences. And that's why people want to watch them in the boxing side of things. So how do they then, if they're needing to train and train really hard and they're in camp for however long and they're really grinding it out to be successful in the space and to kind of make a name for themselves on the circuit, how can they do that whilst also making content? And a lot of them have to sacrifice the content in order to do that. But then what happens to the kind of focus and the core of what they do, which is making content? Like that has to, you can't have all things at once. And maybe to what you're saying, there is a lot of creators do make that mistake, or some do, where they try and do everything all at once and they don't either, you know, bring in good teams or find ways to kind of outsource whatever it might be. As you're saying, you lose focus, everything else starts to crumble around that. I mean, what is the kind of the main advice you would give in order to find that focus if you're struggling as a creator?
I think you really need to understand that if you want to make this a career, and a business, you have to have the discipline to be consistent. And as creative people, we often don't want to be consistent. It's fun to be creative and go, I want to do the next thing. I want to do the next thing. But truly, I think if you're just starting out and you're trying to build a career, the most important thing is that you find your format. You find your thing that works, that you can commit to. It's like Sidemen Sunday. You start that. You look at it where it is now. It's like that unlocked everything. But it doesn't mean that when it starts to unlock everything, you should do everything. You kind of have to sit in the pocket for a little bit and commit to that format.
I think you just need so much help to say no, because creator, and I'm speaking from experience. Like, I don't want to come across as like we're experts at this. I would say I personally have needed so much help in this career to say no, because, you know, 4 or 5 years, basically our career trajectory is this: start something, get called crazy. It works. Incredible validation, right? Mm. Boom. Now you're on top of the world. You know, like, this worked. I proved everyone wrong. I can do this. I can make it my own media distribution. 3 years in there, I learned everything. Leave, super cocky. We can do it again. Fall flat on your face. Mm. Doesn't work, right? Doesn't work. Run out of money. Make no money. We were, by 2019, our bank account was negative $18,000, right? So that's a pretty big gut punch. And from there, when things start working, now you start getting monetization opportunities. People are offering you $10,000 to do this. Oh, okay, yeah. Why not? That's not hard to do. We know how to do that. And then it turns into $50,000 to do this. Well, okay, we could totally do that. Then $100,000 to do this. And then you're like, how can I say no? Who am I to say no? I was in a place where I got paid $0 or I went into debt.
Still got the red in the back of your head.
Yeah. Exactly. And so then you need to get to a point where you surround yourself with people who can say, hey, that's not the right move for the brand right now. Let's keep building this brand. Let's stay focused. Let's just make really great videos. You don't need that right now. And I think we have a really confusing relationship with enough as creators. Because, you know, obviously as a creator, there's some level of like validation seeking, some level of something internally that is pushing you to be this person who's a creator creative, right? And so I think as opportunity comes, you need to surround yourself with people who can say, hey, let's not do that right now. Let's stay focused. Let's stay on the path. That's super attractive. That brand deal is super attractive, but
it's not right for us.
It's not right.
Yeah, 100%.
And, you know, Emilius de Moldenberg said this when we talked to her yesterday. We talked to a bunch of creators who say kind of, you are what you say no to. And that is like the biggest lesson I would say over the past couple of years as guys who have gotten a lot of opportunity and have sometimes taken away our focus from trading that for monetization opportunities. And again, I will say to all young creators, like, it is hard. You have to experience it yourself. You can hear me saying this, but you're going to experience it. You're going to get offered, you know, a big deal, and you're going to have to make this decision of like, okay, that's not exactly where I'm trying to go, but still making videos, you know, like I'm in the advertising business, right? So I can take that deal.
Yeah.
But you have to surround yourself with people who see the clearer path of where you're going.
Yeah.
I would say 2021, one of the most impactful things we did was develop a menu as a creator and be like, okay, one, our product is the podcast. It's this interview show. It's a talk show where Samir and I talk to each other. That's what it is. And what we offer, what you can buy, is this 60 to 90 second integration. And that's it.
Yeah.
Because up to that point, it was like, we will do whatever. Like, let's just see what comes in.
We're chefs and we'll make you any meal.
We'll make you any meal you want. Mm-hmm. Like, we can do it all.
Yeah.
I think we saw ourselves as a production company because that's kind of what we were for the years prior. But yeah, once we developed a menu and we were like, we got to stick to the menu because the menu helps us create the show. Yeah, it was nice.
Whenever you like productize,
you just call it the menu.
And brands, I think people generally like to be.
They also want to, but
yeah, they like you, clarity.
Hey,
right?
You're the business. You got to tell them what they can buy.
You got to tell them what they can buy.
Exactly.
And if you are in the chance that you want to go off menu, our advice to creators is make that an outbound thing. Call the brand and say, I got this idea. Don't let them come to you with an off-menu.
Usually we do this, but actually we'll do something different for you.
Yeah, because we've been wanting to work with you. Here's the idea we have. But if someone comes to you and they say, I got this crazy idea. Can you fly to Japan and do this thing? You're like, hey, I would love to work with you, but this is my menu.
Yeah.
If you want to work with me, here's the things you can buy.
And often they make it work, right?
Yeah, they'll make it work if they want to work with you. And if it's the right fit, they'll work with you.
Yeah.
But that was a big lesson for us, was like developing that menu and being like, if we're going to stay disciplined, we can't say yes to you know, things that will take our focus away.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you stick to that menu, you're building the engine for your car.
Mm.
Like truly, you just stick to it. All of a sudden you have an engine that will move the car.
Yeah.
Then as you get that stable, you can worry about like what color is the car? Like what do you paint it? What are the details?
Surprised you went with car. You could have gone with griddle, oven. You're building the oven.
Same thing in the
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
But the engine moves.
You're deep on this menu thing. Yeah. You could have gone
with
food.
I could have stayed on food.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I switched to automobiles.
Yeah, that's fine. That's okay. I'll forgive you. Yeah, that makes sense. And I think for creators, having a bit of focus in their packaging and what they're presenting, I think, you know, from my experience, I don't know if you guys have felt this, it'd be interesting to talk to you about management and your experiences. I'm sure you've had different management and you've gone through a lot of that cycle to now you're doing all yourself, I believe. But I think especially in this country, so much of the kind of management to create a relationship and the management taking the creator out, it isn't done in a strategic way. And a lot of it is around, let's just try and make money. How transactional can we be? Rather than how can we protect the creator's ambitions and use brands to empower those ambitions. It's just how can we sell? How can we sell, right? So yeah, and I thought actually Reed's interview with you guys was great on that, where he was talking about, you know, using brand money to obviously fund the videos, but to make the alignment there so that they could basically make bigger and better videos. That was the aim. That was the kind of driving force of that, rather than just how do we make as much money as we can from this?
Yeah, those incentives are really tough to align, in my opinion. Right now we are represented by UTA.
Yeah.
So we are with like a relatively big agency in LA.
Yeah, they're great. I mean, the best.
Yeah. I mean, like to me, it's like they're best in class. And more importantly than that is like, you know, the agency name, I don't think is as important as the people, as the agents, right? Like I used to, growing up in LA, it was like these names, CAA, WME, UTA, that was the gold standard. You watch Entourage and you're like, I want an agent. I want a big Hollywood agent. Yeah. I want that. But the people there were like really impactful. To sit down and have coffee with them was like, you know, Ali Berman, who's the head of the digital department there, basically sat with us at coffee and painted a vision that was so accurate of what I saw us in, you know, 5 years or 10 years time. And then I understood also working with a big agency, they're not like desperate for cash.
Yeah.
Right. Because they like, yes, they want to make money, but if you don't make them a ton of money in year one, they're not
they can go on the journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They can go on the journey with you for 10 years because they're a big agency and they're not strapped for cash. Mm-hmm. That's a very different experience than like a startup creator management company, which I'm not saying is good or bad. Sometimes you want that feeling of like back against the wall. I want like someone who's trying to make a name for themselves. Yeah. And we have gone through different iterations, really actually only two iterations of what this has looked like. I've done most of our deals from the beginning. Mm. I'm very... You know, I think I'm relatively controlling on the business side and also have had to, you know, learn how to let go of that. But also in the lacrosse network, no one was going to represent us.
Mm.
So I had to learn how to read contracts. Yeah. I had to learn how to pitch.
Mm.
One of the things that I think we learned really well together was how to make a pitch deck and realizing that pitching is storytelling. There's a hook, there's an act one, an act two, and an act three to any pitch deck.
There's a crisis, there's a climax.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
It's the same thing as making a video. And a lot of times what we learned, I mean, how we got the Gatorade business in lacrosse was by making a video. Mm. Because we were like, we're better at storytelling this pitch in video form than we are in PowerPoint. Yeah. So we learned a lot about pitching. My advice to creators about getting management or agencies is to develop your own internal North Star and compass and give that to an agent or manager. And we're actually currently developing a course to help creators do this because we believe that developing this for yourself, you have to understand your audience. You have to understand your value proposition. You have to understand what you're willing to offer on your menu. And then it should be a collaborative relationship with, you know, the agent manager or internal ops person to hand them the deck and be like, here's where I see myself going.
Here's the brief, right?
Here's the brief.
Yep.
Can you go out and get these deals? Because otherwise, they're going to bring you whatever deals come in the door.
Yeah.
And again, you're going to be like, how do I say yes? How do I say no? Mm. And so creating this guideline of like, hey, can you please hold me to this? This is where I'm trying to go.
Yeah.
This is what I think makes sense. Based on what you know about the market, does this make sense?
Mm.
You know, that's, I would say you have to look at that relationship as like, you know, collaborative and a partnership.
And how many creators, obviously from those that you've spoken to and those that you see, do you think get that right? Like how many people have that understanding of their North Star, or how many do you think are just going video
to video, just floating along essentially without that strategy?
I think a lot of the top creators, by the time we speak with them, they are super focused, like we said. Like they are pretty set on where they want to go. And most likely they've found a good manager or operator to help them get there. But I feel like we're speaking to people who have gotten to a point where they've been career creators long enough to make the mistake of not having the right person or not having a clear vision of where they want to go.
We talk about this internally quite a bit, but I think the term creators is similar to the term athletes. So like categorizing all of us in one word is just like categorizing all athletes in the term athletes. There is a commonality that we all do this thing, right? Where we come up with ideas and we upload videos. But you're going to treat a tennis player different from a soccer player, different from a basketball player.
100%.
And within those, all the athletes are different. Even on one team, on the Los Angeles Lakers, everyone on the roster is different, has a different team around them, needs different coaching, needs different things, has different desires. So you look at every single creator, you can't, like it kind of sometimes annoys me to hear people speak about creators in broad strokes, because the amount of creators we've talked to, I'm like, everyone is
so different.
I'm sure you've experienced it. They're different. And they all have different motivations and they all have different incentives and they all have different desires. Some are pure artists and they want to just make stuff and leave them alone, let them make. And for them, they'll build very small teams, have very low overhead so that they can just be nimble. They don't have to build the next big media company. They can just be an artist.
Yeah.
And then you go on the other side where you have people who want to build the next Disney, you know, and they're like, I'm a media mogul. And that's an okay thing to want too.
Yeah.
And they need a different type of management and a different type of support to do that. And I think we have to understand it's a spectrum of different types of people. And that's okay. You know, it's all a bunch of different creative people who have different aspirations.
Yeah.
But, you know, the broad strokes conversation around creators, I think, is ill-advised.
Yeah, it's not sophisticated enough, right?
Yeah.
And actually, we're at a time now where there's such variety and there's so many different platforms and ways that you can distribute and create content online. You can't put everyone into one bucket. Yeah. And I think brands who are always behind, right, still do that to such a degree. There's such a distinction between somebody who's focused on TikTok to somebody who's driving on YouTube, for example, or even the strand or the genre. But I speak to so many brands and they still look at it almost like, I don't know, in this country anyway, very 2016 Instagram as being the creator rather than even on even YouTube distinctions for most brands they don't really understand yet. So yeah, there's almost an education job, I think, in a bridging between creators and the more corporate world, I think, to understand those distinctions and start to really get more focused on it rather than just thinking everyone's an influencer even. They don't even use the term creator half the time still.
I think the world glances, it doesn't read. So like, the people who are working at the brands aren't actually watching the content, but they just know they should be working with creators and they know the numbers are high and aren't actually like observing and being like, what is this specific creator making videos about? What are the intricacies of their storytelling? That's hard work to do that. And you know, may or may not pay off. But I find that the brands that we work with who are actual fans or members of the creator community, like they watch content and they can text us after a video and be like, this was really great that you said, or this moment was really great in your video. And you're like, okay, they get it. They're for real, you know? And I think that's a really refreshing thing. It is too all encompassing. And I think we are getting to a point where, you know, how would you classify, you know, again, like a celebrity who's posting content online and getting deals? Like Sydney Sweeney posted a Samsung branded post to her Instagram. And I look at that and I'm like, that's, you know, we have a Samsung partnership. Like we do the same thing.
Yeah,
like, are we considered the same in that context? Or I just want to be like Sydney Sweeney.
I think, I think it'll have to be revert to like, I'm an actor, I'm an artist, I'm a comedian, I'm a host.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think we'll have to fall back on some of those
traditional
I guess the titles within entertainment. Even though it is, you are doing more as a creator.
Yeah, because we're also publishers. I think that's the biggest difference. Like we distribute the content and we are really actually valued on our distribution abilities, right? Like how people value how to engage with us largely comes down to our ability to distribute the content and our reach.
Yeah.
So we are more publishers at times, but we're also the producers and also the talent. And so there's a lot of different things that go into being a creator.
I mean, do you know how many videos you put out? Do you know the number?
No.
How many do you think it's probably?
I mean, since 2011,
Since 2011, who knows?
Who knows?
Because in 2011, we were treating YouTube like Instagram. Mm-hmm. Like I remember I sat in the office one day and I was like, we need to publish 3 videos a day. And that's what we would do. And some of them were like 30 seconds. Yeah, yeah. 20 seconds, 30 mm-hmm. seconds. Mm-hmm. And everyone in the office would work on, like I would work on editing a video. Colin would work on editing a video. We had another team member, Julian, who would work on editing videos. So we were just trying to pump out 3 videos mm-hmm. a day. So I have no idea from 2011 to now, yeah. but it's definitely in the thousands. Yeah.
So of all the stories that you've told, who has surprised you the most, do you think?
That's a good question. I would say... I would say Andrew Schultz was surprising at the time that we interviewed him and chatted with him because it was years ago now. Mm. And we knew a little bit about him, but didn't know a ton about him. And I think he really impressed me with his like intellect. I would say the comedians that we've talked to.
Yeah, yeah. The most surprising thing has just been interacting with comedians.
What do you think?
I mean, they just, first off, they come to the table just ready to go. Like they understand how to captivate an audience and they understand how to storytell. Like they have such a dedication to storytelling live in front of people, which I think must be so much harder than storytelling behind a camera. Yeah. They get immediate feedback more often than like any other type of storyteller.
Yeah.
So they're just dialed. Like they just tell a great act one, act two, act three.
Yeah.
And they're such great observers of the human condition because that's what they do. Yeah. They're just like aware of what's happening all the time. That, yeah, like when they come to the table to venture off of comedy into like the business of it or the storytelling side, those skills transfer over. Like the storytelling skills transfer.
Yeah. I would say Cody and Noel, talking about TMG, Hasan Minhaj and Andrew Schultz all were like just such fun conversations because they can navigate engaging storytelling with, you know, business. I would also say Doug DeMauro. Doug DeMauro is a US-based creator who talks about cars. Launched a business called Cars and Bids, got a $37 million investment from the Chernin Group. And Doug is the most down-to-earth, humble guy, still shoots everything with an iPhone, you know, rolls up and shoots all of his videos by himself, tripod, iPhone. He's like the epitome of creator to me. I like talking to some of the, I'll call it like the older creators, like Mark Rober and Doug.
Yeah. The veterans.
Rhett and Link.
Lily Singh.
Yeah.
Lily Singh came in. Like she was ready to go.
Like the veterans, you get to see this mature perspective on what we're doing and like the life implications of what we're doing and a little bit of the people who have passed the excitement of fame, validation, and money and are like, you know, you kind of like, so what are you seeking now? You know, what else, why do you keep doing it?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I think that's what we're all trying to understand. Like who are we as human beings that we wake up every day and publish these videos to millions of people that we don't know. Like, well, who are we? You know, I think we're all trying to explore that. It's a journey of like self-discovery as a creator. And so talking to some people who are, you know, the elder statesmen, as I'll call it, in the space, I don't know if they want to be referred to as that, but that's always really surprising and enjoyable.
Yeah. And what are the threads of their perspective on how things have changed? Because obviously things have changed so much since those early days of YouTube, right? Like, do you see any threads? Because we definitely see it here, right? I speak to people like a Joe Sugg, for example, Saffron Barker, who's been doing it for a long time. And their view is very different. And they almost see the trend of how things have gone for them, right? And they sort of see that coming maybe for the next generation. And yeah, what's your take on that?
I'd say it's just perspective. It's perspective on, like, we're in a creative industry. This is meant to be fun. Don't stress yourself out with too much. You know, like even Mark Rober edits his own videos. He has one person who helps him because he's like, that would just be too much for me. It would stress me out. Like lifestyle wise, it would just not work for me. And I think we're conditioned to look at everyone around us and compare ourselves and think about this large, large enterprise we need to build because other people are doing it. But I think the perspective from some of those people is more around how do you build a life that's fun for you on a day-to-day basis that's not incredibly stressful, where you haven't built yourself a job that you don't like. And I think that's a pretty easy thing to do as a creator because, again, you have people around you that are incentivized by different things. You know, if you have a manager or agent, you know, no fault of theirs, but they're incentivized. Their ability to earn is based on your willingness to say yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? 15-20% of what you make is what they make. So if they want to earn an income, like they need you to say yes to a lot of things.
Which is why you bring them on in the first place to help you drive your own.
Exactly. Yeah. But that can get exhausting because you're like, this is the person you trust. And they're like, I really think you should do this deal.
Mm.
You're like, okay, fine, I'll do it. Oh, okay. Now, but then the implications are on you as the creator. Now you are living the life where you're staying up late at night editing the video, working with a team, maybe not liking the video, and that chips away at you mm-hmm. as a creator. That's like really impactful as a creator to do work that you don't like, that stresses you out, that feels purely commercial. And I think all of that, you know, mixed up, like this journey can be really taxing if you don't figure out why, what type of life you want as a creator.
Yeah.
And I think, again, those perspectives are really
Has it been like
here.
A deal or a moment where you guys have felt that in your own sort of journey where you've actually been like, this is not fun anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah. Definitely.
Definitely. Yeah. We've been doing this for 12 years.
Yeah. We like, you know, we've been doing it for 12 years. We found a lot of success in 2022 and in 2021. And finding that success after years of some years being in the red, yeah, we said yes to a lot. You know, and a lot of stuff sounds exciting. Like the off menu stuff sounds exciting, especially when you find a format.
Yeah.
And we like advertising and we like brands and we just love people. Like we've been interacting with a lot of people in this industry. It's been exciting, but yeah, you say yes to a lot of things and you say yes to more things than you maybe have the infrastructure in place to really carry out. So you got to catch up a lot.
Yeah. I don't think I can think of like a specific one because I think we enjoy creating enough to always find. Like we're also really intent on everything being our voice and being our type of creative. So we always find a way, but sometimes it manifests itself in like Saturday, Sunday night, Colin and I staying in the office, you know, and that gets taxing when you're 34 years old and you've been doing it since you were 21, right?
It's not the one deal. It's the aggregate.
It's the aggregate.
All the deals.
Who said it to us? Tim Ferriss. He said, doing something even slightly energy depleting will compound over time. Right.
And slowly
will chip away at you and then you get burnt out. Right. Yeah. We did have a moment in 2020 when we first started catching some traction. We essentially got offered like the biggest deal we've ever been offered, single deal we've ever been offered, but it would be very intense. It essentially like turned us into video producers for another company while doing our own stuff.
How much was it, if you don't mind asking?
It was just about 7 figures, I think. Yeah, just about. So just about $1 million. And for us at that time, that was crazy. You know, that was crazy. And to say no to that was crazy. And so I couldn't wrap my head around saying no. I couldn't wrap my head around it. I was like, who are we to say no to this? And we brought on a consultant at the time who now helps us run our newsletter, Josh. And we did the thing. We built our deck and we shared it with him. And we said, this is where we want to go. And he got on a call with us and he was like, hey, I just want to gut check you guys. What you sent me as the deck does not align with this deal. So the answer is no. This is not where you want to go, right? And we were like,
oh yeah,
that's true. And I remember I drafted, you know, an email back saying no, and I couldn't believe it. Every word that I was writing, I was like, how can I do this? You know?
Like, did you guys debate that one a lot? How long did it take to kind of come to a conclusion?
Yeah, we debated it a lot. I think even in the middle of writing that email, I called Colin and I was like, we can't say no, right? We're not going to say no, right? Also because we really liked the company. It wasn't, there was nothing about it that was like, the only thing that was wrong was that it didn't line up with where we said we wanted to go, how we wanted to build the Colin and Samir show, how we wanted to build our brand. It was going to take focus away from that. And everything else about it was fantastic. Like we loved the team. We loved the company. Like it just felt right. And we said no. And I remember when I sent that email, I was so scared. And then I went on a walk and I felt relieved. I was like, oh. And then I was like, wow.
Yeah.
I'm feeling relief right now because I get to work on the Colin and Samir show. And that was like a big moment of learning of, okay, actually, I do want to focus on our stuff, even if that means less money. Because, you know, you start to realize over time, it's like the things I want are, you know, I have this thing where I want to build this brand. I want to create value. That's where we were talking about this yesterday. It's like the currency that I value the most is when someone I respect reaches out and says, I love your work. That's the currency I value the most. And you need to make money to support yourself. But at some point, there's like an amount of money that's not worth losing the focus, right?
Yeah.
And not worth just like keeping the integrity of what you're trying to build.
And I think at that time, we had just enough money to support ourselves.
Yeah.
Like we were not taking home money at the end of the year.
Yeah.
If they'd asked you 2 years earlier, what would you?
Yeah.
Would you
yeah. Oh, it would have been. No,
there wouldn't have been a debate.
Take
yeah.
Me. Yeah.
It, take would, me, it wouldn't take have been me somewhere. Yeah. I think when you're a young creative, you're looking for saviors. You know, you're like, I'm good at this. I know how to make good creative work. Someone see me and pull me up. Mm. You know, someone give me an opportunity. I just need one person to give me a chance. So, and there were people who did that for us, you know, in the early days. There were people, a lot of people who did that for us.
But it's an interesting time because if you don't have the leverage of your brand or you don't have the leverage of your own distribution, which we were just at the beginning of really building, those types of deals come where it's like, hey, I've noticed that you're really good. I believe in you.
Yeah.
But I want you to do what you do best on my platform.
For my brand. Yeah.
For my brand. And I'll pay you a lot of money for it. And that's a serious moment that I think a lot of creators will go through when they don't have the brand yet. They don't have the full leverage of the audience.
Yeah.
And they got to make that choice of like, am I going to dedicate time to someone else's thing, someone who thinks I'm good? I may feel validated, but I'm not building something long-term for me. Mm. And that's what we really had to decide.
And that's why without the North Star, without that sense of real drive commitment.
I think that's why we want to teach that. You know, like that took us years. And I think as we're building this course, it's like really about finding that internal compass so that as these things come to you, you know how to say yes and no. Because that to me felt like the hardest thing to decipher as a creator was how do I know if I should say no to this? What if, you know, the biggest fear for me was like, this is the last deal that will come. That's the biggest fear.
Yeah.
I was like, if I say no to this, that's the end of my career. There's no other deal that will come. Mm-hmm. And it takes you a long time and a lot of maturity to realize that's just not true.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you are the type of person who just wakes up every day and is committed to making a really great video, your opportunities won't run out. You might have to be able to scale up and scale down based on the market and based on, you know, where monetization is coming from. If you really want to keep your creative you know, the way you want it, you're going to have to be nimble enough to go through hard times, but opportunity will come if you're committed.
Yeah. Yeah. And fast forwarding to now, right? That's 2020, 2023, huge amount of growth within the last 3 years, you say kind of weirdly after that point, right? Everything sort of took off. That may be slight inflection. It seems like in your story. And what is the setup now? Like, what do you guys have in terms of a team, in terms of infrastructure? You've got an amazing flow. It feels like you guys are really confident in what you're doing. You say you've got your true north. You know where you're heading. What is the infrastructure that supports that today?
This trip has actually been pretty illuminating to see how far we've come. Like last year, the year before that, there's no way we could come to London for 9 days. There's no way. And now we're here, we're recording episodes and we send the episodes back to our team in LA, and we have, you know, when they wake up, there's episodes that are ready, and we have 2 full-time editors there. We have a producer, Marilyn, who's been helping us coordinate all of this. We have short form editor, and we have, you know, a multitude of people who help just with the Colin and Samir side of things, let alone our newsletter, which has a separate team, and that's been coming out Monday, Wednesday, Friday. And it's interesting to be here and see it all still moving.
Yeah, it's strange. It's strange.
Yeah.
It's a strange realization. But I would say, like, you know, the thing that we realized, what helped us find our focus is like, we as a company, in V1 of the company, we create content and we sell advertising.
That's it.
Anything outside of that box, we don't do right now. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think what gets exciting is like, we did sell a course in 2020 and it did do well, but we aren't set up to do that right now. Our team is set up to make content and sell ads. So that's what we do. And that means we make written content through the newsletter, the published press, and we make video content through Colin and Samir, audio video content through Colin and Samir. And that's what we do. And so everyone in our organization supports that. So like Colin said, there's, you know, about 6 people who help us on the Colin and Samir side, mostly content production and operations. And then on the published press side, it's a joint venture with another company. And we have a team of, you know, 2 writers, an editor, an ops person. We send that 3 times a week, and that's it's the same model though.
Yeah.
It's we make content and we sell advertising.
Yeah.
Now we're at a point where we're ready to say we're pretty confident in these engines, right? We want to make sure these are excellent for the audience, excellent for the advertisers. We like them. We have to still like them, right? Again, we're the creators. If we look at our own work and we're like, that sucks, then it's not going to work. Yeah, so we have to fall in love with our own work and make sure we stay in love with it. And we feel really rock solid now. So now we're like, where can we venture? What are we excited about next? And recognizing every new business function is a completely new business, You want to launch merchandise? That's a whole different business. You want to launch a membership community? That's a new business, right? And you know this better than anyone, but these are completely new businesses. And you have to think about the implications of launching a startup within your company, right? You're launching a startup.
Yeah.
If you want to make merchandise a profitable business, it's a startup.
You know? I mean, And I think a lot of creators and when you have a platform distribution, where you've got the distribution, so you can do anything.
Yeah.
In reality, any of those things could be your whole life, just doing one of those businesses, let alone trying to do 5, 6, 7, or 8 and try and do them all yourself. And yeah, obviously, I think for us, it's how do we work with partners? Probably similar to how your experience with the published press. It's like you do your thing amazingly well, but let's work with somebody else who's an expert in what they do.
They
come together.
Yeah.
Like, don't try and be world-class in everything.
We always say, without partners in that business, I think we would have gone 8 weeks and then been like,
nah.
We got to focus on videos, right? Like Colin said, I think creatives are creative. They're not consistent. And so you have to partner with people who are consistent.
Yeah.
People who know how to be consistent human beings.
Yeah. I started a company with 2 accountants.
Right. Those are consistent people.
They're very consistent
people. Those are consistent people.
I'm not consistent. I like to onto the next thing, onto the next thing. And I need people to kind of, slow down.
Totally.
And then creators as well, there shouldn't be the expectation that they are also the skilled operator, that they are the skilled, consistent, head down person. You need somebody looking up, somebody looking down, right?
I think we're really good at 0 to 1. From now on in our career, I think we'll look at things and we'll be like, that's a cool idea. I think that'll connect again because we have a deep study of our audience and we'll know what will hit.
Mm.
We have to remain very in the pocket with knowing our audience because otherwise we'll launch stuff that no one wants.
Yeah.
So we have to really stay close to our audience and then be like, I think this could work. We're excited about it. Let's take it from 0 to 1. But then we need to get someone to take it from 1 to 10.
Yeah.
Because the type of person who's willing to go 1 to 10 is very different. Mm-hmm. From a 0 to 1 person, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we know we are not 1 to 10 guys. We are 0 to 1 guys. And we need to surround ourselves with people who know how to do that.
And what is the end game for you guys?
I think it's changed a lot in the past couple of years, and especially as we've gotten older. I think I really see us as very committed to storytelling and unscripted storytelling and storytelling about human beings. And as long as we're doing that, I think we'll both be creatively excited. And what we do quite a bit now is sit down together and be like, what feels uncomfortable in our day-to-day life? Where's the friction? Can we remove that? And candidly, honestly, the only thing I can think about in 3 years is this more fun than it is now? Is it more frictionless? Is it more about the storytelling? Mm. Is it more about the creative work? Are we getting together? Are we sitting at a computer watching an edit and being like, as excited as we've ever been about the work? If we're there, I'm happy. You know, like that to me is what in 3 years' time, I can see that vision. I want to work on like documentaries. I want to work on storytelling and I want to do it, you know, with my creative partner I've been working with for over a decade. And I want it to be fun. Mm. That's how I feel. Like, of course I want the outcome to be financial success.
Always follows that, right?
Yeah, I want that. But we have to focus on the process because the process is, you know, what creates that outcome.
Yeah.
If we're focused on the outcome, then we probably won't get there. Yeah, you know,
you probably won't enjoy it as much.
You won't enjoy it. Yeah. If the daily life isn't fun, then it doesn't matter.
Yeah. And what's the point? Yeah.
Yeah. The goal is to afford ourselves the time to work on projects that outside looking in may feel a little bit irrational.
Yeah.
But we're really passionate about. And that once we finish them, even we are surprised with the outcome, that is something better than we could have imagined, different than we could have imagined. When we interviewed Carl Jacobs, he said, I don't want any year to feel like a sequel year. Mm-hmm. And I feel the same way with us, that like, I want every year to feel different. And I want there to be projects that define those years, that the year before, I could have never imagined that that's the project we would do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, that like looking back, the dots kind of connect. But when you're in the moment, it just feels like, wow, we just...
Yeah. Everything's fresh.
We kind of punched above current. Even what we thought we could do and keep continually punching above.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we felt that at the end of last year with the 24 hours with Mr. Beast at the Beast Burger. Mm-hmm. We got to make a documentary, you know, and that was a dream of ours for a long time, was to like make docs. And that's what we did as a production company. And I couldn't have told you that that sequence of events would lead us to making a, you know, a doc in the style that we wanted to make it, where we were holding the cameras, we were partially vlogging, partially shooting. But it was such an energizing project. And I think you have to balance a bit as a creator from like the engine, which is our talk show, to the experimental projects. Like we actually don't really want those to be planned. We don't want to tell people, hey, we're going to do five of those next year. Because they just, when they come, yeah, you want to be in a position where they just comes.
And you've got the engine to
yeah, and then the engine remains your, again, your menu, how you're monetizing, everything like that. And that was really fun. That was great. And I think like, when I look at this year, we talk about like, oh, at the end of this year, maybe we'll do something, maybe something will present itself to us and we'll be in a position to go pursue it. But that's just, that's the goal, is like to be creatives, to live a creative life.
Yeah. Last two questions. So firstly, to each of you, who are three creators who are pushing the boundaries at the minute for you? Doing something really special.
I would think that we probably both have the same first answer, which is yes theory.
Yeah. We're talking about them every day.
They and also are guys who gave us our first real opportunities. We edited for Yes Theory.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And like, those are guys that taught us a lot. And I've been a believer in them as creatives and filmmakers for a long time. But like this morning, they posted on Instagram a meetup that they did in Lebanon. And they posted about it with an hour's notice. And it was packed.
Crazy.
And I've been to some of these meetups. Yeah. And when you talk about audience transformation, they have changed people's lives. Like they have people with Seek Discomfort tattoos. They are making movies on a regular basis that will make you cry. Like they are, to me, the... They are innovating consistently when it comes to programming. You can watch something they've made and it feels like you're watching Netflix and it's made by three guys, you know? And I've been in the rooms and I know what the rooms look like when they're editing. It's not a production studio. It's three guys.
It would be totally understandable if this many years in, the level of editing came down. Of like, okay, yeah, like you guys, you've established an audience. Yeah. You don't need to go this hard.
But every week.
Yeah, every week. Yeah, whatever, it's crazy.
I also think they were some of the first movers in building a truly impactful merchandise business and Seek Discomfort. And yeah, I think they are innovating when it comes to storytelling. I really appreciate the work they're doing.
Yeah.
I think Amelia de Moldenberg is innovating when it comes to monetization and what it means to be a creator, right?
Yeah.
She doesn't, Chicken Shop Date is not sponsored. It's not a sponsored show. There's no brand deals in that show.
It's also typically 6-7 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's short, right? So what she's doing is, you know, she launched a production company alongside everything she's doing with Dims Inc. You look at this new world of vertically integrated creative. You come to Dims Inc. with a brief. You say, pitch me an idea, right? She can be the agency. She can produce the idea. She can be the talent in the idea. And then she can distribute the idea. That to me is innovative when it comes to the advertising world, the production world. That's like a vertically integrated creative shop. From idea to distribution, she has it all. So I think that's pretty innovative in my opinion.
Yeah. And to be adopted into the mainstream the way that she has, to get, you know, Jennifer Lawrence to be a stop on her press tour as an independent creator, independently built over 10 years is so impressive.
The third I would say, who's someone who's really close to us, is Ryan Trahan. And I think he's innovating in a way of showing us that there's another form of all of this, right? Like it's him and two guys. And he's one of the biggest. And he went from building a team of six to going back down to a team of two.
Interesting.
And I think that to me is innovative to say, with less staff, I can do more, right? Yeah. And to really, he's really focused on he's another like radically focused guy who's just focused on the videos. And he's got all the opportunity in the world and he stays really focused on what he's creating. And I think he's starting to do stuff with his like drops that I really like, with his Howdy merch. And I just think he's showing us a different way when we have two of the biggest creators, one in Mr. Beast and one in Ryan Trahan, doing things completely opposite. You know, I think that's really impactful to see.
Yeah, amazing. And last question, if I'm a young creator at home watching this, what is your one piece of advice each that you would give to that person if I'm starting today?
I would say if you're starting today, think about the community that you're actually a part of in your IRL life. Like, who is the community that you care about, that are your friends, that you actively wake up every day and you want to provide value or better them? I think it's easy to get distracted by where there's viewership, but at the end of the day, this all comes down to value. And the easiest place to identify where you provide value is just like the actions of your everyday life. Who are you actively trying to help?
My advice would be, it's okay to practice in private. So I think we have this connection right now that if I'm creating video, it's meant to be shared. But when I first started creating video, no one watched it because it was before you could share video.
Yeah.
So I would just show it either to my friends or sometimes I would just watch it myself. I would make videos and then watch it back. And I think there's so much pressure on practicing in public, especially when you have a public view count next to it. Mm. It says too much about your creative work.
Mm.
You know, like you publish something that has 7 views, you're going to be discouraged, of course. And that's also part of it. So I think figuring out that you can practice in private, you can make stuff, you can watch it back yourself. It can go nowhere. That's completely fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you can make 10 videos that never get posted and that you just learn how to create videos.
Mm.
So practice in private and that'll give you the confidence to push it public.
Yeah, I think you want to learn how to be proud of something you make regardless of whether someone else watches it and gives you feedback.
Yeah. Amazing. That's a good place to end. Well, Colin and Samir, thank you very much for coming on Unboxed.
Thanks for having us.
Unboxed with Jordan Schwarzenberger is a Listen original in partnership with Arcade Media. The senior producer is Lucy Hunt, and the senior digital producer is Alice Tilley. Unboxed is recorded at PRL Studios in West London with the support of Michael Kalasinski.